This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
This border, what we call the maritime border, a dispute between Kenya and Somalia.
Yes.
Do you think that's what spooked all these things?
I feel like it definitely has to be tied to it. Mm-hmm. The back and forth between Kenya and Somalia is just, it's regarding, you know, the possibility of, I think it's just more than the border. Mm-hmm. It's looking into the possible resources that might be within mm-hmm. Within that area mm-hmm. that both countries seek to control. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the two countries have sort of opted to ignore. Mm-hmm. And when I say the two countries here, I think we have to consider our part in the fault here mm-hmm. in terms of considering more amicable ways to solve this dispute. Somalia, of course, went to court, and we've been throwing the International Court of Justice up and down since Jumada this time. Mm-hmm. Our lawyers are not prepared, and then COVID-19, mm-hmm. Some of the key documents have disappeared. Mm-hmm. And this back and forth, like what's happening with the banning of flights between the two countries mm-hmm. is just sort of, it's just little sparks that point to the bigger problems that I think both countries have refused to sit down and solve, mm. you know? Mm. What do you think about this?
Interesting. I think looking at the history of Kenya and Somalia, I think Kenya and Somalia share about 420, the borderline is about 423 miles, and the relationship hasn't been good since independence. And I think we've had, apart from the border disputes, there were some petty skirmishes. I think there's a time we had a very, very bloody massacre, I think, some time back, and that wasn't good. And the tensions, we thought they were getting better for the last 1 year, but for the last six months, things have gotten worse. Mm-hmm. And I think the most recent one is when Kenya decided to suspend flights when Kenya decided to suspend flights to Somalia, and I think that even escalated this sort of this tension.
Yeah, actually, earlier this week, for those who are still catching up in the discussion, earlier this week, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs issued a notice that sort of extends the ban of flights between Kenya and Somalia. And just to read it for you guys, not in verbatim, of course, the ministry was saying that it regrets to inform the international community, mostly the international organization, including those conducting diplomatic missions and UN agencies, amongst other organizations, that there has been misuse of humanitarian flights between the two regions. Mm-hmm. And the ministry was saying that the humanitarian flights, which were not actually banned in the earlier ban, in I think around May 18, were being used for bilateral and political agendas, sort of, which was against like the agreement that the two countries had when they decided mm-hmm. to ban the flights.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And what's like the humanitarian impact of this from what you think, what will be the humanitarian impact, given that, you know, Kenya has been hosting refugees from Somalia, I think, for the longest time. Do you think this is going to lead to some sort of a humanitarian crisis at some point?
I feel like this current ban just limits sort of the movements between the two countries by flight. Mm-hmm. And I really don't foresee something major, but I feel like it's just going to be one of the things that sort of fuels the fire that we already have between these two countries. Because Eric, you know, when we decided to ban the flights to sort of Somalia mm-hmm. in May, Kenya still allowed a couple of flights to Somaliland, mm-hmm. and I remember the rationale then was the flights to Somaliland were supposed to deliver electoral material. Mm-hmm. So I really, really don't know. What do you think?
No, Somalia has been accusing Kenya of political interference. And I think what made things worse is that there's a break, how do we call it, the breakaway government of Somaliland.
Right.
So sometime back, Kenya's political elites, the Kenyan government, hosted the leadership of Somaliland. As you might know, the Somaliland does not recognize Somalia's central government, right?
So they don't recognize Farmajo.
Yeah, so I think that even made things worse. But hopefully things will get better. But I think one of the things that I mentioned previously is that Kenya has been hosting hundreds and thousands of refugees since the fall of Somalia's dictator, I think back in 1991. The guy was called Saad Barre, right? I think they had a dispute then. And the Kenyan government severally has threatened to shut down the Dadaab camp, which is considered the world's largest refugee camp. But I think they tried to resolve this when we think things are getting better again. Underneath, things don't look good. But on they come, shake hands, more of like a PR stunt. But much later, things again, underneath, things don't look good. Yeah.
Clearly, you don't sound like you're interested in going to Somalia anytime soon. I think away from Kenya and Somalia, let's talk about the inflation for May, and the latest data from the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics shows that the inflation of May compared to April was slightly higher.
Mm-hmm.
It was around 5.87 compared to 5.76, and of course, as we would all think, we saw that we had a slight uptick in fuel prices in May.
Mm-hmm.
So by default, of course, we had in the last month's inflation, we had higher cost of mostly transport, food, and some slight increase in non-alcoholic beverage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with looking at sort of the increase in inflation, in as much as it's small, where do you think we're heading to, especially with inflation of June? Given that we've seen that globally, sort of oil prices have not been dancing the way we'd like them to.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting stats in the that came out this week on around inflation. Not much has changed. Maybe a slight increase in the inflation rate for May 2021. I think, as you mentioned, partly driven by high transport cost, food and non-alcoholic beverages.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, what stood out in the week was CBK or Central Bank. Was it this week or the other week?
Yeah, the MPC.
Yeah, the MPC meeting was.
The MPC was actually in the other week. I remember, I think the Central Bank governor maintained threats,
mm-hmm.
and they were quite optimistic with the growth of the private sector in the period,
mm-hmm.
and it's like the curfew
mm-hmm.
was not, or rather businesses had adjusted to the 10 p.m. curfew, and most of them seemed to recover.
Mm-hmm.
That is at least according to banking data.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But then there's one thing we have to consider here, Eric. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike May,
mm-hmm.
June is going to be a month where, first of all, we'll be expecting the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And from the different media reports and from the different documents that we as Kenyan Wall Street have interacted
mm-hmm.
with, we expect a few changes, especially on taxes, that will see increases in prices of mm-hmm. Basic commodities. I don't know where we're at with the increase in bread prices because of the taxes. And then, of course, we had earlier discussions on whether or not the price of LPG will increase.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think earlier the IMF had suggested that we adopt a full VAT on petroleum products. Is it from 8% to 16%?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any information on whether or not those changes are going to be effected?
Okay, interesting. I think those were contained in the finance bill 2021, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my thinking is once that's passed to the to parliament, this will be passed. But I don't know when it's the next three. But I'm not sure if there's anyone who has gone to court to try stop this,
mm-hmm.
but I know they were contending with the Finance Bill 2021. So I think we expect the Kenyan government at the moment, as you might know, a lot of extremely, they have taken debts left, right, and center, right?
Yeah.
And they are now under pressure from the IMF to repay some of these loans. And of course, they have to look at every revenue source to generate money to repay, some of these loans that they owe. So I don't expect the government to come down to reduce their stance on taxes and all that. So I still, despite, you know, the government, one of the things I've seen, people in government, they don't care even if the economy is doing good or bad, for them they expect taxes.
Right. And which is exactly why I feel like June is likely to be slightly worse than May, because
mm-hmm.
once the taxes kick in, mm-hmm. the new taxes, because of, you know, the budget we're planning to raise, we have a budget of around 3.6 trillion,
mm-hmm.
and I think in the press release that we shared earlier on this forum, we saw that Treasury of course expected the slight tax upticks. Of course, we had technicalities to do your tax exemptions on ventilators and everything, but then since those are not goods consumed in the mass, that's going to have a very, very, very little effect.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So June is likely to record higher inflation
mm-hmm.
than May.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's my thinking based on the tax changes that we are expecting with the Finance Bill of 2021.
Okay. But according to CBK, from their last MPC update, mm-hmm. they said that the inflation is currently within their target range.
Right.
I think for them, they don't expect much. I think as a government, of course, they have to be optimistic, but they don't expect much changes on the inflation rate.
I think in general, our governor is optimistic, and that is something that we share, which I think he has to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess My most of my concerns are towards more of like the consumer than small businesses,
mm-hmm.
but then I guess we'll have to wait for that and see.
Okay, interesting.
I think before we move away from inflation, there are a few highlights that I'd like to share,
mm-hmm.
and there's this infographic that I interacted with earlier in the week, just on the specific sort of highlights of inflation by the central bank,
mm-hmm.
And we saw that out of the 5.9 inflation, the prices of food rose by I think around 7%,
mm-hmm.
and it was mostly driven by changes in price. I think essentials like cooking oil and vegetables. But then we saw that the price of maize flour fell, and then of course when it comes to fuel, we had increasing petrol prices, and which in turn affected matatu fares. And then we also had around a 12.2% increase in kerosene and around 4.4% increase in diesel.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought those were some of the highlights that I'd like to share around the inflation for May. Moving on, at a more regional level, and I know this is something that you're passionate about, mm-hmm. Given your earlier conversation with Yellow Card on cryptocurrency,
mm-hmm.
the central bank of Ghana announced plans to pilot a digital currency,
mm-hmm.
and they call it the eCedi.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was watching the YouTube video of the announcement earlier. And the central bank governor said that the ECD will go through three different phases.
Mm-hmm.
And the first phase was going to be sort of designing the electronic currency.
Mm-hmm.
And the design is already well underway. At the moment, we are waiting implementation, of course. And then, of course, they're going to implement the design, sort of piloting the digital currency to a few people,
mm-hmm.
and a few mobile apps in Ghana,
mm-hmm.
and then they plan to pilot it everything once everything goes well.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about it? You know, a government-backed digital currency, essentially, well, a CB, mm-hmm. a CBDC in Africa. I think Africa's first, right?
Yeah, I think that will be Africa's first. And one of the things that we have to realize, Ghana is very, very progressive. Ask yourself, why did Twitter go set up their headquarters in Ghana instead of Kenya, South Africa, and all this? So I think, personally for me, I think Ghana is quite progressive and very open to some of these new technologies.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen, say, Ghana issuing a ban on crypto like other African markets, countries like, say, Nigeria or Kenya, right? And I think for me, what makes this this new CBDC by Ghana being the most interesting is that it will be the first in Africa, right?
Yeah.
I think what they did is they followed the example of China. China began implementing, they asked a few, I think early this year, they mentioned that part of last year. I think earlier this year they began the implementation plan via, like, in a pilot, they had a pilot phase, a few users testing that. Across, I think, it's a city out of China there, a few users and a few merchants that were selected. And from the reports, I think, so far coming along very well. I think the question is how will that compete against, say, the unregulated digital currencies? That's something that I think we'll watch out on. But the other interesting thing about some of these central bank digital currencies is that, look, essentially, how will that work in a country like Kenya, whereby we already have, say, a very active mobile money user base, of course, using the most dominant mobile money platform, right? It's very hard. Yeah, I don't know how that will pan out, but for Ghana, I think quite progressive, and how that from a digital currency perspective, I think it. I see a future whereby, look, an exchange. Some of these central bank digital currencies can be traded in or can be easily exchanged or traded in some of these major crypto exchange platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are getting into a point whereby in the next few years, it will be very it will be a no-brainer for, a regulated financial institution to see how they can embed crypto products into their systems. So I think it's something that will be very, very interesting to watch.
I feel like the same concerns that you have is the same reason why it's actually like a nice time for African countries, African governments to look into CBDCs, because globally, of course, we've seen that major cryptos have been on a bear run. It's been quite red,
mm-hmm.
and because of that volatility, despite that volatility, we still see that globally we have growing interest towards cryptocurrencies,
mm-hmm.
and it's essentially, we know that there is no day that we're going to have sort of a global seizure in activity of cryptos. So why not government sort of come into the space,
mm-hmm.
and try to regulate it, and essentially just, because see, once we have governments like once we have an African government like Ghana get into the space, it already paves way for other countries to reconsider. We're talking about countries like Kenya. I know our governor hasn't sort of spoken much about it, but it sets the precedent.
Okay.
Same way, of course, I'm avoiding saying Nigeria because the Central Bank of Nigeria was really iffy about cryptocurrencies early, and they were quite vocal about it. But then, see, once we have government involvement,
mm-hmm.
starting businesses around cryptocurrency, especially for startups, is going to be way easier. Integrating the different use cases of cryptocurrency into normal life is going to be easier, since investors and entrepreneurs do not necessarily have to worry about the impediment of regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Because unlike other risks, regulation is something that is really, really, really hard to work around.
Interesting. Our central bank has previously, the central bank governor, I think he previously mentioned earlier in the year, no, that was about the last quarter of 2020, when he mentioned that they are in discussions with other global central banks on, mm-hmm. on the possibilities of entering the digital currency space. And I think what Njoroge said is that they were looking at the introduction of central bank digital currencies, and for them the main reason was because of this, some of these mushrooming private cryptocurrencies, and he said that they felt they were being left out and they needed to create their own space. And something interesting that also came out this week is that the European Central Bank, I think there's a board member, I think I saw that on Bloomberg, a guy called Fabio Panetta. He said earlier this week on Wednesday that the development of the digital euro is ongoing and they are actually cooperating with the central bank and some of the relevant financial institutions in Europe. And I think one of the things that came out is that the digital euro is going to be much more safer and more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Means of payment for, say, the citizens of the European Union. But you also warned that, look, some of these, the central bank digital currencies will come with some caveats. So, and I think this basically adds up to Lagarde's earlier remarks in the year when he said that, look, in as much as they release this, it has some potential shortcomings, and that's according to Christine Lagarde. And he said before they began even development of this digital, the European digital currency,
right,
he said that, look, they did a survey, and they said out of the survey that they did, 50% of Europeans were interested in a digital euro, and they were however yet to make a decision on whether they launch such an asset. That's according to Christine. But I think it's something that's getting interested across the globe. Ghana will be the first in Africa, but I think if that becomes very successful, other progressive countries will have no option but to adopt it.
I think I'm more of leaning towards China here, and this is why earlier this week China actually announced that it's going to hand out part of its digital currency to the citizens of the capital, Beijing, in a lottery, and specifically that they promised to hand out around $6.2 million of the digital currency instead of starting with a nationwide rollout.
Mm-hmm.
Their pilot phase is going to come out in the form of lotteries across the country. And what I found interesting is that instead of going the decentralized way like Bitcoin,
mm-hmm.
what the People's Bank of China is looking into is sort of internationalizing the currency through the digital currency.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of taking, you know, it's kind of taking Russia's way of moving away from the dollar, and what they want to do is sort of to internationalize the renminbi through the digital yuan.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was quite bold.
Okay.
And sort of trying to digitalize the whole currency as a whole, so reducing the, I think, I, and again, this is just my opinion, sort of reducing the coins and notes in circulation in favor of a CBDC.
Okay, interesting. China is quite an interesting case. A few weeks back, less than a month ago, they banned banks or financial institutions from dealing in crypto.
Mm-hmm.
Do they view the mainstream crypto, not the mainstream, but I mean the major crypto, as competition to their central bank digital currency? I don't know that, but I think according to...
Would you mind sharing your audio, please?
Can you guys hear now?
No, not yet.
Chuck?
Yes.
You guys can hear us now?
Still not.
Blinkman has confirmed that we're live. Sorry about that. We were in the middle of a discussion about China's CBDC and how the People's Bank of China is trying to sort of drive the adoption, or rather testing the country's digital currency through a lottery, and they promised to to issue around $6.2 million in the digital renminbi, if you will, mm-hmm. as part of the trial phase for the currency. And also we also discussed about Ghana's case point, where the Central Bank of Ghana is planning to pilot their eCedi. Currently, it's still in the works, but then they plan to roll it out in three phases. So at the moment, construction is not really the right word. But they're still fashioning the digital currency, and then they're going to run a pilot and then, of course, implement it countrywide.
Interesting. No, China is a very interesting case. They've been banning crypto since 2013, right? They've issued several warnings, but how far do some of these warnings go? They never go anywhere.
You know, my concern with China is not even like forget what's happening in the country. My concern with China is sort of how much, you know, because let's leave China out of this. We saw what happened when Turkey issued a ban on crypto, and investors on crypto went wild. Mm-hmm. And now when you think about China, the scale of the population, a ban in crypto in China already drove sort of cryptocurrencies crazy, and that's usually my fear, as opposed to what happens inside the country. Mm-hmm. But I feel like they're just going their way, what they usually do with most new technologies, which is sort of build homegrown solutions the same way they built their own versions of social media, the same way they have their own native search engines, the same way they would want to build native digital currencies. And I think it's sort of like a protectionist move, mm-hmm. from especially with the semi-volatile relationships with the US.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Speaking of crypto and the prices, it's still... Now, for the last few weeks, it's not been good. Today, on Friday, the price of Bitcoin actually fell to below 38,000 by today. And today it's down by more than 7%. And, you know, most people can't handle this volatility, right? But if you can't stay when things are bad, why do you expect to reap 200% gains that for the people who stayed in the long run? But I think recent it climbed back to around 39,000. But I think the main reason from what I've read in the media is that Elon Musk, I think, he's been still the guy still influencing the market, the crypto market. And today he sent out, was it today or yesterday, he sent out two tweets, which basically seems to imply a breakup with Bitcoin. And I think that's what's made the prices really decline, go down today.
Sometimes I don't like what Elon does with... Yeah. I don't like Elon's influence towards cryptocurrencies, because it feeds into the idea that... that cryptocurrencies can easily be swung, mm-hmm. and I feel like it's you know, it's one of those self-fulfilling prophecies, especially with retail investors and how Elon has been considered one of the influential figures in the crypto world.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Rufus, have you been following crypto? Do you have any comments that you like probably to add? Because you're a financial analyst, and we thought, look, maybe this is something that you might have a few insights that you can give to the listeners.
I think we'll just have to let the guys sort of raise their hand when they're ready to contribute. I guess for our listeners on Telegram and on Twitter, just raise your hand in case you feel like you want to chime in. But then, Eric, moving away from cryptocurrencies, mm-hmm. Let's talk about Let's talk about AMC and what has been happening with the share. We saw that AMC sort of had really, really wild crashes and ups this week. And like when you look at, for example, like I think the stock sort of rose really, really high on Wednesday and Thursday. I think on Wednesday it hit a high of around $70.
Okay.
And on Thursday we also had a rally that sort of allowed the company to issue up to 25 million more shares. And mark you, this is considered a quote unquote a meme stock, which has mostly been sort of sparking because of Reddit chat rooms and the works of Wall Street Bets. What do you think about this?
Interesting. That began with early in the year around GameStop, that rally on GameStop. I think now Reddit traders now began picking up some of these stocks like AMC. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, AMC Entertainment, I think the price dropped to, if I remember very well, it rallied off from the lows and turned green, and I think the main reason the company has the price went up is that the company announced, I think, that finished they have been buying shares of Class A common shares, I think up to 11 million shares of Class A, and part of this was, I think, the additional shares diluted the value of the existing or stockholders, and I think what I mentioned is that the company said that it had already completed offering the stocks, and they raised about $507 million US dollars. And I think what you mentioned is that retail investors who have been mainly active on Reddit have been leading the rally. And when the company announced that, look, the company actually put out a new portal to connect with retail investors, and they even offered investors free popcorn and exclusive screenings and other sparks, those who hold its stock. So if you hold a stock of AMC, they'll give you a free, how do we call it? They give you free popcorns, exclusive screenings, and other perks. From what could I see that JP Morgan said last week that the retail order flow in AMC jumped to around 5.3 million, and for them, this kind of quantitative strategy, this kind of imbalance can lead to more outperformance by the stock in the coming weeks, which means they expect the stock to go up in the coming weeks.
And you know, I'm happy for Reddit pros, mm-hmm. but then my concern here is what's happening to guys who are short at GameStop, because the activity in this week alone sort of put their losses for the year. This week alone, it put their losses for the year to around $5 billion. Mm-hmm. And this is without factoring in sort of the trends that JP Morgan foresees on the stock.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. If you've been following up on what happened, when we were just finishing up May, the company, I think on 27th, if I remember very well, the company shares rose by nearly 50% just in a single day.
Right.
Just in a single day. So I think most of this has been driven by the guys on Reddit, the retail traders on Reddit.
I think it's just sort of an extension of GameStop. And what do you think is going to be sort of an event that is going to stop all this?
I'm not what can really stop all this?
Because you know, at first it was GameStop, and mm-hmm. then we had AMC, of course. And you know, when GameStop and AMC sort of rallied, we had a little bit of activities in other, allow me to call them, fossil companies like you know, like BlackBerry. So for example, this week when activity on AMC broke up, we saw that BlackBerry traded around 500 million shares on the NASDAQ.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw companies like, I think BBY, nearly Bed Bath Bath and Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
We also had some movement in this meme stock. Do you think it's going to get into a point where regulation might have to step in?
Not really. Early in the year, during the rally for GameStop, the U.S. government actually tried to step in, and nothing really helped, because what we are seeing at the moment is some sort of a retail revolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Since the pandemic, most people are were under lockdowns, right? Say some of them lost their jobs, very extremely high unemployment rates. So everyone is currently looking for what's the next sort of opportunity or a way that I can easily get a new income generating activity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're seated, you have access to the internet. Stock trading is something that everyone would want to get into, right? And previously getting into the stock market or even in the financial market, it's been extremely difficult. Given the barriers of entry. But right now, with the kind of the new technologies that exist, it's easier for anyone to get access to some of these, to get access to into the market, basically direct market access. So, and I think this is not something that's likely to stop. I think we should expect this to go to increase dramatically.
But then there's that, you know, excuse me, with that much power in the retail investor, we've also seen sort of massive bears on AMC alone. For example, today, AMC's, in as much as it rallied yesterday, its price also fell to sort of almost half of what it was trading at the high in one day. So imagine the same stock that was trading at 70, you know, fell all the way to, you know, close to 35,
mm-hmm.
you know, all in one day. So in as much as like retail investors might have like a lot to gain with meme stocks, but then there's also a lot to lose. And this is why we sort of encourage people to conduct their own research before they venture into investments, and not take any information shared on this show or any other platform as direct investment advice.
So it's good to mention that. Look, take this information with a pinch of salt. So these are just our own opinion and ideas that we share internally, given that we cover markets. So before you make any investment, it's good to do your own due diligence, and basically your own research before you make an investment. But the information that we take, that we share out, are basically our own opinion on markets. So not really something that, it's not investment advice. It's basically our own opinion around markets and what's been happening and the kind of opportunities that we see in the market, right?
Lastly, Eric, before we sort of close today's discussion, I feel like there's something that is really, really important to talk about, and DevKey.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 weeks ago, DevKey said that they were interested in investing in Mumia's Sugar, but then today they issue a statement saying that they've withdrawn their interest from investing into the revival of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason that they gave behind the decision was the political interest in the transaction.
Mm-hmm.
You're more informed of these matters than I am. What do you think is really, really happening here?
Okay. I think before we go into what's really happening, a few weeks, I think for those who are aware, Mumias went into do we call it receivership or what?
Yeah, receivership in around 2019.
Yeah, Mumias was placed under receivership by KCB in 2019 after Mumias failed to clear loans amounting to 545 million Kenyan shillings. And then KCB appointed, a receiver manager to protect the assets and recover the loans of this particular, so that to recover its loans.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that we forget, Mumias is a listed company, right? So I think the share, in as much as the share price has really declined, the company has had several financial troubles. So I think part of this, they had in 2017, KCB with Ecobank and CBA, Commercial Bank of Africa, loaned about 2.6 billion to assist Mumias run operations after running some sort of into a financial challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So after Mumias failed to clear the loans, KCB began to cover Mumias after the company failed to clear, I think, a total of 480 million in debt dispersed to the company. So, and Ecobank and CBA both had loaned Mumias about 1.7 billion, 364 million in loans, respectively. So, I think that's where the challenge began. So, so as to revive the company, KCB invited bidders who were interested in leasing and reviving the company, right? And today, surprisingly, Devki Group, which is one of the largest manufacturing companies in Kenya, announced that they are withdrawing from the race to revive the company, Mumias, barely less than 2 weeks after they had expressed an interest in the company. What the chairman of the company said today was that their decision was mainly because of increased political interest in the transaction, and this because early in the week, what is this week? I think the Senate were against this, and they say they wanted to investigate how that process was being conducted.
Yeah, I think we had the Kakamega senator speaking about it. He was demanding documents relating to the whole transaction.
Okay.
And whether the whole decision to sort of go on with any was based on KCB or not, and questions on sort of whether the government should sell its share in Mumias Sugar.
Okay, interesting. So when these guys pulled out, I think it was a wise decision for Devki guys. I think they want to protect their reputation at this moment in time, so which I think it's very important given the kind of investments that they've made over the last couple of months. Probably they thought that could hurt their reputation. I think that could be the main reason that they pulled out. You know, as a business, at times you want to you always want to, how do we call it, you always want to avoid some of these political risks that come with such investments. So I think for them, they pulled out given that they wanted to protect their reputation. But hopefully, maybe in the coming weeks, we might get more details on the same.
Yeah, I think we'll wait and see. Is there anything that maybe we might have left out?
Interesting. Family Bank.
Oh yes, Family Bank. I believe you want to talk about the bond, right?
The bond and the comeback. What do you think about the comeback of Family Bank?
I'll just say this. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for the time Rebecca will actually lead that company to listing on the NSE.
Ah, interesting.
Family Bank is doing quite good for its size.
Mm-hmm.
And we already see like how well its bond is performing.
Mm-hmm.
on the NSE, and I think it's time the whole share is listed and investors take a shot at it.
Interesting. So in their Q1 results, I think they reported a 71% increase in net earnings to about 510 million, which is massive increase given that a few years back these guys were making losses. And they had a number of challenges with regards to corporate governance. I think this lady, Rebecca, has really revived the company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been performing since she came on board. And another interesting thing is that earlier around in in April, they actually redeemed their bond, which was a 5.5 years medium term note worth about $2 billion. It was due on 19th April 2021, and the thing is, the bondholders on the maturity date, the bondholders were actually paid their principal together with accrued interest for the final 6 months, which I think quite impressive, given that given what these guys have done, and the bond was listed on the Nairobi Stock Exchange back, and I think what they wanted to use this bond for was, I think, for expansion purposes. And earlier this week, Family Bank again announced that, look, they were raising another $8 billion Kenyan shillings through a medium-term note program. Details about this were shared to investors, and they have actually received approval from our local markets regulator to do this transaction. And this transaction will be through a multi-currency note, and it will be raised by way of public offer, and they want to use proceeds from this transaction will be used to strengthen the bank's capital base and support lending. In the first tranche, they target to raise about $4 billion, and they expect to raise the balance in the next 5 years in a number of tranches. And according to the CEO, he said that, look, they want to raising this cash is going to push it into the second phase of the growth, which is part of their 2020 and 2024 strategy. They want to lend mostly, of course, to SMEs, build up their technology platforms, and of course, to diversify their products and services. Interesting, from what's happening across this bank, I think quite an impressive turnaround that they have had. So I think what we can wish them from here is, of course, we have to wish them all the best and good luck their transaction.
I think now that you're discussing medium term notes, I think we had a few activity also on the medium term note by EABL, mm-hmm. And I think earlier they announced that they'll go ahead with an early redemption of the $6 billion medium term note program. Which was issued around 4 years ago. It was issued in April 2017, and I think the redemption is going to be effected somewhere in the middle of this month. So it's on the 18th. It's on the 18th June.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. EABL is such, I think, one of those gems on the NSE. It's been, despite the pandemic, I think they had quite some impressive results. Despite, I think they issued a profit warning, but I think given the opening of the economy, they'll cope with it, that they are coping, and I believe it's a solid company that every investor should have in their portfolio. In case you want to listen to this podcast or share with your friends, it will be available on Hisa app. Which you can always check up Hisa app on both Android and iOS. So after this, our team will upload this this chat or this conversation on Hisa app. You can listen to it, some of the ideas that we share on markets, and you can also share the same with your friends. So you can check the app on both Android and iOS, Hisa app, HISA, and give us your feedback on what we can improve on the app. But the whole idea behind the app is that, look, want to give people access to financial markets, and of course give them news and embed content into it. So we are, our engineering team is really working hard to make sure we have the app and a few more features in the next couple of weeks.
Yep, I think this is all we had for today. There's going to be a lengthier discussion on markets. I know markets is not something that we really went deep into in this forum. But then, for market listeners, do not worry, do not fret. We have Markets Monday coming up on Monday at around 9:30, 9:45 a.m. And that's when we get to have a really in-depth discussion on what moved markets in this week. And we have our in-house analyst, Felix, who is going to be steering that ship. This is all we had for today. Thank you so much for joining the discussion. In case you have any questions, please feel free to raise your hand or type in the chat box in case you're on Telegram.
And then if there's anything that you guys feel we need to discuss, you can always chat us on Telegram, on Twitter, and tell us maybe some of the topics that we should discuss, what we can include, and any other thing that we should improve on.
Speaking of which, we're planning a great deep dive on equities expansion into Congo, especially in light with their Q1 results. In case there's anything that you'd like us to consider, it would be great to hear from you, either through the HISA chat or through the Telegram chat. Eric, do we have anything from...
No, that's it for today. Thanks again, guys, for tuning in. We are looking forward to the next chat on Monday. Right.
All right, guys. Goodbye. Do we have anyone from maybe from Spaces wanting to speak?
Let me check. No requests in terms of anyone wants to add a comment or speak. No request.
Well, I think that's it. See you on Monday.
Okay. Thanks. Bye, guys.